Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this special edition of the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, the Green Nonprofit Show. You know going green is the right thing to do for the environment and your organization, but budgets are tight and knowing how to get started can be a mystery. This show provides the practical advice on going green you and your colleagues need. While each week the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart Radio Show provides advice on fundraising, board development, and social media, this special edition is all about helping you go green on a nonprofit budget. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, this show draws from experts around the world and his book, The Nonprofit Guide to Going Green, available on Amazon.com and at greennonprofits.org. Guests on the Nonprofit Coach, The Green Show, are leaders in their field who share tips and trade secrets for nonprofits. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. Remember, just like our weekly show, this is a live call-in show. Add your voice by calling 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Just click on radio. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of the Nonprofit Coach, The Green Show, Ted Hart.
And welcome here to this very special edition of the Nonprofit Coach, The Green Show. This is Wednesday, November 9th, and I'm coming to you live from the nation's capital. It's a beautiful fall day here, very bright sunshine, bright blue sky. This is a special edition of the Nonprofit Coach, which is focused on helping charitable organizations go green. Just like the main Nonprofit Coach show, you can call in and ask questions of our page two expert today, who is Adrian Capps, who I will introduce in just a few moments. And that number is 347-324-3080. Those of you who are familiar with the show know that you can also join us over in the chat room, and I see a number of people over in the chat room. You can type your questions there if you would like, or you can email me at tedhart@tedhart.com. Now, over here on the special edition of the Nonprofit Coach, The Green Show, just like with the regular show, we do have our radio links. Now, I'll be getting to our radio links in just a few moments. Now, let me tell you where you can find the radio links to follow along with this show. There are actually two places. You can go to greennonprofits.org, and in the upper navigation, you'll see a tab that reads radio links. If you click there, you'll be able to see all the radio links for our prior show in addition to today's show. As always, here on the Nonprofit Coach, you can also follow along at tedhart.com. Click on radio links there. Enough of the introductions. Let's get on with the show to page one news. With Thanksgiving here in the United States right around the corner, it's not too early to start thinking about Christmas. Over in the radio links, you will find that GE Consumer and Industrial is making the national Christmas tree this year greener than it has ever been before by developing and employing their latest energy-efficient lighting technology. GE is also celebrating its 49th consecutive year designing America's premier holiday tree. You'll be able to read all about the specific direction that they are taking, making the nation's national Christmas tree even greener than before, over in the radio links at Green Nonprofits. Remember, look in the upper navigation, or at tedhart.com, click on radio links. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, The Green Show, in the radio links, we have a few environmental tips for you. This comes to us from Watch Mojo, a video over on YouTube. So let's take a listen at some environmental tips that may help your organization go green.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Brayton, and welcome to WatchMojo.com. It seems everyone's going green these days, and if you'd like to participate in the trend, we've got a few tips for you. The Environmental Protection Agency reports that the United States produces approximately 220 million tons of garbage each year. This is equivalent to burying approximately 82,000 football fields 6 feet deep with compacted garbage. First step, I know it sounds easy, but always recycle. Sometimes you may think, if I don't recycle just this once, it's no big deal, but it is. Recycling saves resources, saves energy, and protects the environment. The plastic bags we use every day are harming the environment. Each year, an estimated 500 billion to 1 trillion plastic bags are consumed. That translates to 1 million per minute. So, be sure to bring your reusable bag with you when you go shopping. Take a reusable mug with you to the coffee shop instead of using a paper cup or styrofoam. Styrofoam is bad for the environment because it doesn't dissolve, and it can stay in landfills for up to 400 years. Most people drink out of these, but did you know it takes 47 million gallons of oil to produce the water bottles Americans use each year, and most of them end up in landfills anyway? So why not use a reusable plastic water bottle? See? Going green isn't that hard.
Some nice practical tips there that can help you get started in making your organization more green. You can watch the video and listen to it over in the radio links today at greennonprofits.org. Click on radio links. Next up in the radio links, you will find a very interesting backgrounder that comes to us from New Zealand's Business Council on Sustainable Development, the Business Guide to Energy Efficiency. Now, as you're clicking through this link that we provide you over in the radio links today, one of the things I specifically wanted to draw your attention to is their quick list. When you click on their quick list, it allows you to go through and start making assessments of your organization in such key areas as lighting, water use and water heating, refrigeration, your building, heating and cooling systems, and transportation. What this does is actually raise some of the issues. It also has an energy user calculator that you can use in terms of putting in the equipment and the wattage and starting to calculate your energy usage for your organization. So lots built into this really terrific guide available over at the New Zealand Business Council. You can find a link directly to this at greennonprofits.org, click on radio links, or at tedhart.com, click on radio links. Now, I want to draw your attention here on the Green Show to the Green Nonprofits Organization. There are partners with the Green Show, and this is a nonprofit charitable organization whose mission it is to help all charities go more green. What I want to do is draw your attention to their certification program. In their certification program, you can click on certification on their website, and there are two ways that you can start working towards becoming a certified green nonprofit. One is you can download the PDF form, and we ask you not to print it. It's more user environmental friendly if you use it in digital form. But there's also an online certification, Point Saver, where you can just create a profile, save your points, and the goal here is to earn 100 points towards certification and then to submit your application. For those of you who may already have certification, you will find that we have just released the recertification document, which is available to your organization by downloading that on greennonprofits.org. So we wanted to draw your attention to that because we certainly encourage all nonprofit organizations to take the extra step and to become more green. With that, I'm going to wrap up page one news and get right over to our page two expert. Don't forget that as we get to page two, you can call in and ask questions at 347-324-3080. Let's get on over to page two. It's my pleasure today to welcome Adrian Capps, who is not only an expert in areas of the environment and is a co-editor and author in the book, The Nonprofit Guide to Going Green, and I was very pleased to have the opportunity to work with Adrian Capps on this book, but she is currently the Assistant Dean for Development and External Relations at the UC Davis School of Education, where she has overall responsibility for coordinating and establishing the goals, policies, and procedures for development activities and for the effective implementation of school-wide development, public relations, alumni relations, fundraising, and selected university-wide marketing functions at the school. Now, since 1998, when she finished her undergraduate degrees and began a career in the nonprofit sector, Adrienne has raised over $30 million for a variety of causes, including at-risk youth mental health and higher education in Virginia, New York, and California. She certainly has a very broad view of the nonprofit sector, and our topic with Adrienne Capps today is charity fundraising, but from the angle of greening your nonprofit fundraising effort. She's a certified fundraising executive, CFRE, since 2004. Adrienne has published several articles in Advancing Philanthropy and also edited and contributed a chapter to this book, The Nonprofit Guide to Going Green, which was published in December of 2010. So just coming up on the one-year anniversary of the launch of this book, which means a lot to us to be able to have Adrienne here with us on The Nonprofit Coach. Welcome here to The Nonprofit Coach, Adrienne Capps.
Thanks, Ted. I'm really excited to be with you today.
Adrienne, the book has been so well received, and you and Matt Bauer were so instrumental in helping get this book off the ground, and of course working with dozens of authors from around the world who are experts in a variety of different topics related to helping charities go green. This book covers everything from travel to water use to greening your office, so a lot of different topics. What I wanted to do is actually start off with the book itself, and then I want to specifically get into your area of expertise and your topic of greening fundraising. The Nonprofit Guide to Going Green, what do you think this means to the nonprofit sector to have a book specifically for the sector itself?
I actually was really excited about being a part of that, the project that we worked on together as an editor and as a chapter author. I thought it was quite ahead of its time, and that's why I was sort of attracted to it. Sort of, we've been talking about some of these kinds of things in the nonprofit community, but to bring it all together and to bring all the experts together and all the authors together was amazing. I learned a lot through the process being an editor and working with several of the other authors. I learned a lot, exactly like you say, across events and water usage and buildings, and it was really exciting to be a part of that.
I think in putting the book together, certainly it was a thrill to have the opportunity to work with you and to get to know you and Matt Bauer. And if there's anything that helps you learn a lot about someone, it's writing a book together. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, exactly. There's a lot that goes into
creating a book like this. But it occurred to me as we were putting this together, and of course we came from the perspective of there's an awful lot written about going green, but at that time there was nothing that brought it all together from a nonprofit perspective. It was almost more interesting to know what we didn't know than what we did know for the nonprofit sector.
Yeah, I would agree. It was a fascinating, as I said, to be able to talk to all the different authors, and we were talking from people all over the country. The examples that I used, and even in my chapter, were organizations that I found, by just talking to people on social media about what they were doing in their own organizations. So I learned a tremendous amount, and I thought it was a lot of fun. After all the work that we did, we actually, Ted, you and I, and Matt had only all met for the first time after we published the book.
So they published interesting.
So it's just all the work we did together. I think that's even a testament to, going green, that we, we put this whole thing together and produced it and had never even, met face-to-face at that time.
Right, weren't flying all over the world. We weren't adding to the carbon footprint for this book. And particularly pleased that, as you know, and I want to let our listeners know today, that in putting this book together, we also affected the folks over at John Wiley & Sons. This was the very first book that is truly a green book that they printed, and it was printed on recycled paper with soy ink in electronic format. There's also a print version as well. But one of the things that we really push for is that the book be affordable, be available to charities of all sizes, but also establish this footprint of being on recycled paper and soy ink.
Yeah, I think that was extremely impressive.
Well, we cover a lot of different topics, and certainly you're working on a very large campus that has a large carbon footprint itself, and certainly your involvement there. Your expertise in the topic that we want to talk about today is greening a fundraising program. On sort of a macro effort, are there a lot of things that are different from a development office perspective and a fundraising perspective as opposed to a charity overall?
Well, I've actually been talking to, since we scheduled this time for the show today, I've been talking to a lot of my colleagues going back to the organizations that I provided as examples in the book, now that it's a couple years later. What has changed over the last couple of years in terms of greening your fundraising programs? And really, it seems like a lot of what's sort of pushing us along is the technology, and I guess even in the last 3 years, budgets into the greening process for fundraising programs. So technology is moving so quickly that we're without even really consciously talking about greening our fundraising efforts, we're sort of being brought along by younger audiences, by younger donors, by organizations. I work with a couple of organizations, and one that I'm on the board of is an all-volunteer organization. We have board members across the country. So in order to, that's sort of also bringing us into the idea of greening all of our efforts, not only fundraising. So.
Right. It's interesting because you brought up a couple of sort of influential perspectives for greening your fundraising program. One is a particular interest of younger donors to know that they are supporting organizations that are also environmentally friendly, but also the cost saving aspect of moving into more green aspect. So let's kind of take those apart a little bit, because I think both of those are important to understand from a development officer's perspective. Talk a little bit about what's influencing young people and why would it matter to them that a charity be green?
Well, I've seen or heard some of the research about, I guess, the millennials and generations after them. Really, their focus is, they were born with some type of technology in their hand. And so they're not used to at all being without, an iPhone, a smartphone, iPad, some sort of technology and a device in their hand. So I think it's natural for them to, it's not even like a conscious decision but around the greening, but that it's just a part of the way that they live and operate in their world. And then secondarily, I think, that they are more, some of the characteristics that are described of younger generations are to be more conscious of, more socially conscious in general, but very specifically to, the impact that all things might have on on the way that we operate in terms of environmentally, socially, politically, they tend to be a pretty active group of young people. So I think from many different perspectives.
So in their activism, in a lot of ways, would you say that for millennials or for younger donors, they do equate the use of technology as being more green?
I'm not sure, actually. I mean, I think that's just, it's just what they know, that they're, that every generation you picks up those types of things, and it just becomes a part of their life. So I think in some ways technology doesn't necessarily, I don't know that it's really a conscious effort to be more green, but I think that they would, if they thought about it that way, they would say, yes, that I am contributing in a way by using technology and not, printing out things and sending documents around and sending photos around and all of that. I'm doing it all online through technology. But I think it's just...
So for charities, the use of technology and moving in that direction and being more green is not just a good idea rolling forward, but is in a lot of ways becoming a core competency of an expectation of supporters.
Absolutely. I think if we're looking at, I guess, Gen X, millennials, and the next generations. Yeah, it's something that they're going to expect. You won't be able to communicate or gain an audience with them increasingly in any other way.
Right. There's a study that came out from Intuit that shows that by 2020, which is effectively only 8 years away, fully 40% of Americans will be coming of age in a time where they did not know a time without social media, did not know a time without the use of the internet and mobile technology. I think that's a huge percentage, and certainly points us in the direction of some of the things that you cover in your chapter regarding the traditional fundraising method as you outline it in your chapter, and then the transition to what you call the new green paradigm. Can you talk to us a little bit about that transition? Certainly, I think probably most of our listeners have an idea of what you mean by traditional fundraising, but what is this transition that you speak of?
Well, I guess the way I approached this, my chapter, was really that, you know, what the discussion was around about greening your fundraising efforts was not necessarily rocket science, or and also that it was sort of a level of green, a shade of green, and that was sort of the idea around the transition was that, and that was some of the examples that I provided there of other nonprofits, that it's not a 0% or 100% effort, but it's shades of green. It's let's transition into thinking a little bit more green from what we were just talking about in terms of what our audiences are demanding in terms of technology, in terms of even what our budgets are forcing us to do in terms of providing the resources to do some, you know, carry on some of our fundraising efforts. But the transition was really to demonstrate to people and show to people that there are shades of green, that this is a process that you can do over time, that you can take steps towards and implement and see how things are received, how things are working, and not you don't you know that there that, that you have some time to and can take the time and should take the time to transition to say you know from all direct mail piece to an all email solicitation.
It's interesting in your book. I think this is a very important theme to highlight, is that you do see this as incremental, that you do see this as something that you move and step towards rather than sort of the big bang approach. It's like everything's green, as you said, shades of green, where you maybe become more green over time. Is that because it takes time to learn and integrate these tools into your organization? Is that why you recommend an incremental approach?
From many different perspectives, I would recommend that. I mean, you would want, depending on your audience, we were just talking about younger donors, and that might be your audience, but your audience might also be an older generation of donors that aren't used to, are just transitioning themselves and are in different, you know, acceptance levels of the use of technology these days and have different capacities to do that. So I think that's one of the reasons why it's a good idea to have a transition, because you want to have buy-in from different constituencies in your organization. You want to make sure that you're communicating with them in the way that they want to be communicated. And even for budget purposes, I mean, if you know, you would think that moving towards green would save you money. Maybe it won't. So there might be some, or there might be some budget implications of making a transition. That, for example, if you're going to enhance some of your technologies or website, that it might cost you a little bit money, more money on the outset, but save you money in the long run.
And it's because you're adding more tools over time, but is it possible that doing too much at one time overwhelms your donor population or even confuses your donor population?
Perhaps, yeah, because they're used to getting communication from you in one way, and if you change it, then they might miss it. They might not know it's you. So I think that's also really something good to consider.
And does that go back to what you were discussing in terms of different age categories or understanding your own donor population up front in terms of, you know, is it predominantly younger, is it predominantly older, in terms of the speed at which you bring these changes about?
Yeah, absolutely. I just made a transition from at UC Davis from the Graduate School of Management to the School of Education. And the Graduate School of Management, 80% of their alumni were under 50. So you're going to want to talk to, you know, I always thought about that when we were thinking about how we were going to communicate and everything from an invitation to a solicitation to requesting a visit, requesting a meeting at the School of Education. I would imagine that because the school's been around much longer, I would say the program has been around much longer. The school has been here for 10 years. That we have an older population. I would imagine overall than, say, the Graduate School of Management. So we might think about different ways. We want to take that into consideration about how they might want to be communicated with.
And how do you engage your community, or is this something that is an administrative function, or is this something that is brought about more organically?
So I'm sorry, how you want to be. Sorry, say that again.
In terms of your communication, is this something that you sort of decide you're going in this direction and you just start moving in that direction, or do you advise engaging your community in sort of the phasing in of these duties?
I would say that you definitely need buy-in. So speaking again as an example, the UC Davis School of Education, I've been here 2 months now, and we've started to talk about I'm overseeing a team of fundraising and marketing professionals, and we've already started to have some of those conversations about moving more towards doing things online as opposed to sending out print invitations and print communications. But I'm hearing from them, from these folks who have been here for a number of years and know our audience, know our alumni, know our constituency, that, well, we might want to think about that. Because we do have some older populations, we do have some people that are used to receiving things in the mail and, as I was just describing, might miss it, might not, see an invitation if we are doing it online. So, we're talking about how to phase that in, how to perhaps do a survey to ask people, how they might want to be communicated with, to testing some email communications to see, and then doing some analytics to see, what people click on, what, do people open it, and try to match those together to make sure that we are communicating with people in a way that they're, going to receive it.
Well, your UC Davis example is probably a good transition into. We do have an email question from Anna in Philadelphia, and she's asking for your tips on greening nonprofit charity events.
Mm. So there is a chapter in the book specifically about events that goes into great detail. But I did cover that just a little bit in one of the examples that I gave of there was a Democratic committee, actually, it's the Abington Rockledge, I think. They're in Pennsylvania. Democratic
right.
committee, and the example that I actually
talked
about.
And that's outside of Philadelphia, so it's
I know.
Anna's question.
I know, it is. You might be able to get in contact with them. But they do a big event every year, and I guess it's been 3 or 4 years that they've been doing it now, where it's an honoree type event where they honor community leaders and people who've made contributions that are valuable to the organization. And they were looking for ways to save money but still get the impact. They had done a printed program, like many of us are used to at events, where it's sort of, could be an 8 by 8.5 by 11 glossy with, 20, 30 pages and selling advertisements and sponsorships in the back, and it ends up being a really big production. A lot of people end up, what they found was, and I had found in my own experience, is that a lot of times, you spend all the time putting that together and people pay for ads, and then the books get left. The programs get either left or thrown away. And so what they did was to transition to a PowerPoint presentation that was actually on display during the event. And so in the way that they pitched that to their sponsors was that in the same way, come buy a sponsorship package, we'll put your advertisement in our PowerPoint presentation, and we will not only show it during the cocktail reception, before the event starts, but you know, it'll sort of be in the background while the event is going on, and then afterwards in our thank you materials, when we send out emails from the organization saying thank you for attending, they would send a copy of that presentation with them. So it sort of had a little, it had more leg, it had, you know, longer legs, more legs even after the event was over, and people were more likely to, you know, to take a look at that. And I just actually heard from the, I was trying to touch base with all of the organizations that I use as examples in my book, since it's been a couple of years, to see, you know, where they are today. And they said, you know, they've run that event 3 years now, and their profits have been up every year, thanks in part to that, because they could take out a lot of their costs in terms of printing and design, and put a lot of the sponsorship dollars back into the organization. So that was one.
So it sounds like they not only are reducing costs and reducing a carbon footprint or damage to the environment, certainly killing fewer trees, but at the same time potentially increasing the value to the sponsors and donors who were involved in the original glossy book.
Absolutely.
As more and more people are going to be able to see that. Adrian, I just wanted to share a quick little reminder with our listeners, so we'll be right back.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
Adrian, we're back. You have a number of really terrific examples, as you said, in your particular chapter. You said that you're reaching back to some of the folks in preparation for today. Which are the ones, or do you have one in mind that maybe has advanced even further than they were before, or involvement in this sort of generated more interest in going green?
Yeah, actually one that I know that you're familiar with, which is the Community Foundation for Palm Beach and Martin Counties in Florida. And they definitely got really interested in the whole going green process. They actually started, they're a community foundation that gives grants out to the local community organizations in Palm Beach and Martin Counties. When I originally talked to them a couple years ago, they had started a program in 2008 called the Going Green Contest. And so they would support nonprofit organizations in the community that were doing things in their own organization, taking steps towards going green. And different, they would give out, I think they in the first year started with four awards. And they had about 25 applications that first year. They gave out about $8,000. They solicited some sponsorships, some in-kind donations to be able to give out awards and prizes. The next year, they gave out, I think, closer to six or seven awards, had more than doubled their applications, collected over $18,000, and actually had an event. And I was emailing back and forth with a gentleman at the foundation that runs this program, and this year they've had over $20,000 worth of sponsorships, and in total in the 3 or 4 years that they've been doing, I guess it's 4 years they've been doing this, they've given out over $73,000 and impacted 29 organizations in those two counties and in supporting their greening efforts in all sorts of areas. And then the organization has actually gone through the Going Green process and has been certified as a green.
It has been certified, exactly, and they were instrumental in bringing a number of other charities to the forefront of the certification program.
Yeah, so it's been really impressive what they've accomplished in the last 3 or 4 years with their.
And being part of this process certainly has increased their interest, and they have advocated that across the board to a number of organizations. In your chapter, you cover a number of different types of fundraising, and as you said, there's a chapter in the book specifically devoted to special events, and so I hope that we did address a bit of Anna's question about special events. But you also talk about major gift fundraising, and I wondered what aspects of major gift plan giving programs can go more green.
Well, there's certainly any print materials associated with your program and major gifts and planned giving that, you know, as more and more could be used online. So, for example, now we're sort of in that sort of shades of green kind of mode here at UC Davis, where we do produce some materials in print, but we make sure we put everything up on the web. So that, and I've often used that in email communication. It's been extremely helpful. I find that I'm emailing PDFs or links more than I'm handing things out. So that's really encouraging. And then I think, you know, what I focused on really about the major gifts, it's really about travel. It's really about, you know, when you're a major gift officer, planned giving officer, you're on the road. And it's about really being, again, you know, as I said before, it's not necessarily rocket science, and we're kind of doing this for even for other reasons, budgetary reasons and efficiency reasons, but it's really just scheduling whole days when you're going to be on the road, scheduling 2 days in a row, you know, and really.
You're not advocating that major gift officers should not be visiting their donors. What you're saying is, you know, bulking up and being more efficient in your travel as opposed to, you know, a lot of, you know, one-way round trips, things of that sort.
Right.
Make it more of a day trip or have several visits instead of going back and forth.
Right. I don't ever, no matter where we go with technology, there's no way to replace a face-to-face meeting and building relationships in a face-to-face. But there are ways to become more efficient, take advantage of other opportunities. So here at UC Davis, at the School of Education, we're taking more advantage of more opportunities of the dean's travel. So he was in Boston last week, and we reached out to some alumni. I've done that in the past with other deans at UC Davis. We're doing that with the chancellor. Both looking at where, you know, where they might be traveling to, and then sort of looking at the reverse, where do we have concentrations of alumni that it would be advantageous to actually schedule a trip and take advantage of a number of different opportunities, create an event, have a couple one-on-one meetings, to really pack in the time and be as efficient as possible. I mean, it impacts a number of things. You know, one part is the greening. You know, there is budget and time, so it kind of hits a number of things with one stone.
So it's about being more proactive and more planful in your approach, as opposed to, oh, I need to go see this person, I need to go see that person. That by putting being green on the table, it changes the way that you do business.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep.
And is that by using, as you said, piggybacking more on other people's travel and using surrogates, or are, as you said, you don't envision a time that fundraisers won't be doing face-to-face themselves?
Yeah. No, the impact of developing relationships face-to-face, I don't see any way that, you know, even over the computer, I mean, you know, even if you could see somebody over the computer, you do iChat or Skype or whatever. I mean, it's not the same. It's just not the same. So I don't think that we'll, in any time in the foreseeable future, we'll be replacing face-to-face meetings. So it is really a matter of how do we get more efficient? How do we be more planful? How do we be more strategic? How do we, and even do that across schools and units, across you know, a number of different, you know, departments and development colleagues, you know, at a university setting or at a larger institution work together as well, look sort of beyond their own.
And that works regardless of size of organization, doesn't it, in terms of being more thoughtful across the board and utilizing assets for visits that might just not be the major gift officer, but may in fact be coordinating the efforts of others.
Absolutely. I mean, somebody that's an event planner. So, for example, here at UC Davis, we have the California Alumni Association, and they predominantly are, you know, alumni relations. And so they may plan events around the country, and they are definitely very good contact with the development officers across the campus to know, let us know planning to be in different areas around the country so that we can look at our own group of alumni and donors and think about who we might want to see in those areas, who might be appropriate for events that they might be planning there and activities that they might be planning. So it's actually a win-win for both groups.
Right, because they get more exposure and outreach, and you're not only saving, as you said, budgets get tighter and tighter, but I think a lot of listeners today are probably relieved to know that your advice as a professional in this area is that those personal visits are still important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just a programming note, Adrian, is just to let our listeners know that once a month here on the Nonprofit Coach, we do have this special green show to draw attention to experts and to help your organization obtain practical advice on going green. The next green show is scheduled for December 16th, and that's at 1 p.m. Eastern. Our guest on the green show on December 16th is our fellow author, Adrian, here in the Nonprofit Guide to Going Green, Glenn Crosston, is going to be with us. He is a noted expert on green business communication, strategy, and business practices, and he's author of a number of books, including a chapter in the Nonprofit Guide to Going Green. But he's author of the books 75 Green Businesses That You Can Start to Make Money and Make a Difference, and Starting Green, on Echo Entrepreneur's Toolkit to Starting a Green Business from Business Plan to Profits. So it's certainly an expert in green communications. And I think in some way that draws me to my next question for you, Adrian, and that's specifically sort of the base, if you will, of fundraising is those things, those tools and tips that you have specifically about the annual fund and fundraising.
Yeah, there's again, you know, a lot of these conversations about greening have really started because of technology and budget, but they certainly have the same impact at the bottom line. And the what I talked about in that annual fund section and the examples that I gave was about another Shades of Green story about taking how you might transition your annual fund program, which has been traditionally direct mail, and moving it more towards email and social media. And I was actually talking to a colleague earlier who was a consultant in New York, and she does a lot of work with nonprofits around their annual fund. And we were talking about how direct mail is still a very viable fundraising approach. It still produces results for a lot of organizations. And really what she was saying is that there's really no equivalent for brokering email addresses, email lists, in the way that you do traditionally with mailing lists, which was actually really surprising to me that, you know, for acquisition purposes, there's no, you know, that organizations are still having to buy and do research with mailing lists. So, you know, that is still in the works, and that technology is still not there yet. So direct mail is still being used, but I liked the example here. This was the United Way of York County in South Carolina. And
yeah, tell us about what they're doing and how their annual appeal became more green.
Yeah, so if you're familiar with how the United Way works, you know, their employer, and they go out into different companies and businesses in the area and solicit donations for through, you know, like one-time gifts, through payroll deduction to support a particular support a pool that United Way might give out to area organizations, or if they had a particular organization that they'd like to support, you know, a payroll deduction that would support that organization or one-time gift. And so they had a number of, and I'm familiar with this from my first position at the Boys and Girls Clubs in Richmond, Virginia. We were a United Way organization. And they have a lot of forms. They would, you know, the United Way would go out, the representatives would go out to different businesses, and they have all these pledge forms and materials that they'd hand out. And, you know, just like the Democratic Committee found with their event, you know, these forms would get left on the table and then end up getting thrown away. And so their first step was really to take the step to be more concise with their form, get everything down to one page or two pages from four pages, you know, reconfigure a pledge letter, or excuse me, a pledge remittance envelope to be as efficient as possible. And then secondarily, they were starting to accept pledges online, so that you could, you know, you could take that piece of paper, but then you could also pledge and fulfill that through their website. So I think it was just a great example of, you know, they didn't just yank all the paper and say, we're just doing this all online and here's where you have to go, but they were sort of taking steps to, you know, be more efficient, be more effective, produce less paper, and that was sort of testing it. That was a way for them also to test with their constituency about, you know, and getting them to transition more towards web as opposed to just sort of cold turkey saying this is the only way we're doing it now. So I thought it was
And again, that topic of transitioning over time comes into your plan and your approach for charities, and that really comes down to a sensitivity to the needs and the desires of your particular donor population.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you need buy-in, you need support from your donors and your supporters and your board and even staff and faculty in your organization to do those sorts of things and communicate with them, or else you'll miss the communication opportunity with them.
And do you find over time that it changes expectations?
Constituents' expectations of, well, of course, because you're, I would think so. I mean, that you're taking their wishes and needs into account. You would think that, you know, over time that they would sort of move with you. While you're having that discussion with them, you want their input on how they want to be communicated with. You're going to test new things, but react to or respond to how they react to things and changes and adjust accordingly. I think then that naturally produces a higher level of buy-in and desire to work with you.
And possibly over time to actually grow in their expectation that things will become even more green.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I think in each of the incremental steps that you've talked about for greening your fundraising program, it seems that it's not even really much of an issue unless you deploy technology.
So it's not... The greening is not much of an issue unless you...
It's not really possible for charitable organizations to truly green their fundraising program without deploying technology.
Certainly, but even in the last 2-3 years since we, you know, since I wrote this chapter and we put this book together, I mean, you think about all of the... things that have even just become available in the last 2 or 3 years to smaller nonprofits, to all-volunteer nonprofit organizations, to those with small budgets, to take advantage of technology. It's becoming – the different types of technology are more – there's a wider variety. There's more access. Things cost less. So I think that there's a tremendous advantage that smaller nonprofits can take – more so than ever, and I think that trend will continue.
That's great. When we come back from this break, Adrian, I want to talk specifically about that topic in terms of what is available now and what are some of the opportunities that are sort of pushing this down from larger organizations that have a budget to be able to invest in going green to some of the simple suggestions that you have and some of the technologies that are now available for charities to be able to start becoming more green in their fundraising program. We're going to be right back. We've got something to give away here. So we'll be right back. Here on on the Nonprofit Coach, the Green Show, in partnership with Green Nonprofits. Those of you who receive the Green Nonprofits newsletter, of which you can register for free at greennonprofits.org, know that the Green Nonprofits organization regularly has a giveaway program, which is supported by the R.K. Mellon Foundation. So we thank the folks at R.K. Mellon who are making it possible for us to give away a copy of the Nonprofit Guide to Going Green. Those who have submitted their name for the drawing for today's show were entered into a drawing, and the person who is the winner today, congratulations to Nancy Bahamades, who is with Clean Tech Open. So congratulations, Nancy. The copy of the Nonprofit Guide to Going Green is on its way. And for all of you, there will be another drawing for our December Green Show. So make sure that you are receiving the Green Nonprofits newsletter and follow the instructions in the newsletter on how you can be part of that drawing. And we're going to go right back to page two on the show. Adrian, before we took a little break, you were telling us how technology really is making going green ever more available to charities, regardless of size of budget. What are some of the things that are more that are available now that maybe weren't available even when we contemplated this book that allow charities to now consider becoming more green?
Well, I definitely wouldn't say that I'm any kind of expert in technology by far, but sort of following the trends, you know, as they come out. But I just see with this smaller all-volunteer organization that I'm the treasurer of, Swish, out of New York, we sort of by default started as a paperless organization because we had no, you know, $0 to put into creating anything in print, and barely had, you know, some money to put together a website. And but just it's just amazing, even in the last 2 or 3 years and my work on the board, what we've been able to do as a small organization, budget well less than $1 million, in taking advantage of, you know, there's even things that we do pay for that we're just joining on with a new database and event management system that does cost a little bit of money, but very manageable for a small organization like us. And how many things, how many components of that are over the web, using technology? I was just talking with one of my fellow board members about that and how we're, you know, at our event and coming up in a couple of weeks, we're going to be using an iPad to have people sign up for the mailing list, make donations, sign pledges for advocacy-type pledges right there at an event. And all of that information will go into an iPad and get loaded into our database. And so it's just amazing, you know, the different forms and different types of, you know, that you can get people to use through your website and using these technologies that will capture information about you know, for donations, for rallying people around different causes, and it's just really amazing what I've seen in the last, and just all the social media that's out there now in terms of being able to communicate. I haven't seen a lot of research studies saying that there's a tremendous amount of fundraising effectiveness using Facebook, Twitter, all of that, but certainly communication. Certainly rallying people around, disseminating information quickly. I think that's, you know, that's definitely changed a lot, and a lot of these things are completely free.
Well, and that really does change. It's sort of a game changing for charitable organizations, and that instead of technology sort of being the back office or the database where we keep information, it's now sort of becoming much more front and center. That it almost is an intermediary of communication and donations between, you know, websites and charities and their supporters.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it makes things a lot more integrated, a lot more seamless. I mean, an organization like Swish can be effectively a lot bigger externally to its external audience than it really is. because it can be so much more integrated on the back end in terms of, you know, websites to email communications, e-newsletters, all of that. I mean, it looks, the branding, the level of communication is exceptional.
And these tools of social media are part of what is game-changing for going green, in that what used to take a lot of printed publications, and I guess certainly the Postal Service in the United States is feeling the pressure of less being mailed, less paper being shared with people, because it's as you said with your example of Swish, it is increasingly possible, if not entirely practical, for charitable organizations to go paperless.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I my heart goes out to the post office, because I mean, it's just you know, I can remember years and years of and early on in my career that was I was dependent upon that bulk mail reduced rate for nonprofits, but I can't remember the last time I ever did a, you know, that we have gone through that. Very, very infrequent these days, and so there's a lot of pressure there, and I know that the post office is, you know, trying to reinvent itself and create new ways to develop revenue, but I think it's a losing proposition, because more and more, you know, even as we were just talking in the last two or three years about where technology has gone and how much more has gone online, I think that's going to certainly not stop anytime soon.
But you also use the example, Adrian, that while lots of things are changing, certainly the use of technology allows charities to become ever more green, technology is not killing direct mail.
Yeah, well, I just think that's just a matter of time. I mean, I guess when I was talking to my colleague, she was saying that, you know, that it's hard to... You know, there's still opportunity for you to buy email lists. It's just hard to convert those people into donors. It's good for advocacy-type organizations to rally people around a cause, signing a petition, you know, getting the word, disseminating information quickly, but it's really hard to convert those people into donors the way you would send out an initial direct mail piece to acquire a new donor. And so I think it's just a matter of... you know, figuring out the equation to make that work, and it's really just a matter of time before, you know, I think the trend will continue, and direct mail will become less and less effective. But
yeah.
It's not there yet.
Well, and certainly I think the integration of online and offline becomes an important issue for charities to consider both. And I guess we go back to some of the themes that of your chapter, and that is making this incremental, but also the different influences on going green, that one of them is budget, but certainly another is expectations of your donor base in terms of how environmentally sensitive you are.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that is a serious consideration. You definitely have to be cognizant of your audience and who you're talking to and how they want to be communicated with while you're contemplating, for budget reasons, for technology reasons, for going green reasons, taking the print equation more and more out of your program.
Because you may find yourself getting some pushback from your own supporters who are not looking to see you in their post box.
Right. Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, it can be, if done properly, you know, an opportunity to educate them, transition, and as we were sort of discussing before, testing, getting their feedback, and moving them, you know, if they need to be, if it's not something that they are necessarily open to, by having that discussion with them and having the conversation to let them know that you care about what they. How they want to be communicated with, that you can help, you know, shift and mold their expectations and what they want from the organization by having that conversation. So in some ways it's going to be, you know, like for example with Swish and with a number of other organizations, it's, you know, the nature of the audience or how you were sort of started, and that's the way you communicate. If you know, that's always been online and always been through email or social media, then it's not going to be hard to introduce another facet. But if it's never been done that way, you know, it will take time.
Well, that's a great place to end our show. It's amazing how fast time goes when you're talking about such important topics. Adrian Capps is currently the Assistant Dean for Development and External Relations at UC Davis School of Education and has been my guest here on the special edition of the Nonprofit Coach, The Green Show. Adrian, thank you so much for being our guest here on the show. We will be back with The Green Show on December 16th, and The Nonprofit Coach will be back next Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern. Adrian, thank you for being my guest today.
Thanks so much, Ted.
You bet. Take care, everyone. See you on Tuesday for the next Nonprofit Coach Show.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcast at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.